Welcome to the History Reviewed channel, where we analyze the lies and deceptions of history. There's been talk of war in South Africa for quite a time, and the number one people who like to run around talking about war are the Zuidlanders, and people are talking about civil war as well. Anyway, recently I've had people contacting me and asking me serious questions, including somebody who has quite serious business interests. And this man was asking me to meet somebody so we could discuss some things regarding a war. Now, as you might know, there are other people who also are looking at war and what can happen in a war. And I've mentioned the Boer Legion, and that I attended quite a number of meetings that they held, and I liked some of the ideas that they were putting forward. A lot better stuff than the Zuidlanders, I must tell you. And we mustn't forget the AWB as well. But there can also be secret groups out there, and I've come across mention of secret groups who have their own plans that are not public for what they will do in the event of war. There is a video that I did about the Boeremacht and how the Boeremacht in its day was the greatest right-wing organization in South Africa, and how the Boeremacht then quietly disappeared when government people began to infiltrate it. Now, one of the leaders of that Boeremacht told me that his final orders to his people were that they must form small groups, they must disappear, they must never come out into the public, and these small groups must also have no contact with each other so that they can't be infiltrated, and so that each little unit functions by itself, makes its own plans, and waits and watches for war. But there could be many other groups. There could be many other groups floating around who were probably never part of the Boeremacht and who may have many other different origins. And it could be groups of 3 guys, 5 guys, 10 guys. And these groups might be functioning and watching and making their own preparations for what to do in the event of a war. And that is really good stuff. I must tell you, there is something to be said, a lot to be said, for secret groups. But you also have public groups. And you actually need both groups. You need public groups and you need secret groups. You need groups that know about each other, and you also need groups who know nothing about the other. Because in the kinds of things that could happen, there could be all kinds of weird chaos. In that lecture that I was working on, going through our history and the history of the whites of Southern Africa, which includes not just the South Africans and Southwest Africans, but also the Rhodesians and the Portuguese. If you go and you look at our past wars, we did some really weird things and even creepy things at times. And our enemies specialized in being creepy. These black communists, driven by the Soviet Union, by China, by the Jews, by the liberal scum, and hidden communists sitting out there in New York and California and London. These were a pretty filthy bunch of people, and their main game plan was the sneaky, creepy game plan. Murder, torture, bombing, killing civilians, murdering blacks who are friendly to whites. This was their kind of game. So we've had lots of what is known technically as low-intensity war in the past, We had stacks of it. Now, crime in and of itself is also a form of low-intensity war, and its methods are a lot like guerrilla warfare. Crime and guerrilla warfare are basically very, very similar. And then you get terrorism, which is crime and guerrilla warfare, but where the goal is to scare people, where you do the most terrible things in order to scare large numbers of people. Communist terrorists were the big thing that we fought. But this is a kind of invention of the Jews as well. Jews have engaged in terrorism in the past. And Jews also had secret armies before they created Israel. They had secret armies that planted bombs, that murdered people, and so forth. But the white way of war generally has been an intensive form of warfare. And this has come from ancient Greece. This notion of a very intensive form of warfare is really a white thing. And it's the form of warfare that has dominated the world for a long time. You'll find that there are other people, other less developed peoples who also have war. Like some of these people in the Philippines and maybe in the Amazon jungle. When they engage in warfare, they engage in a ritual which gets them to the point where they draw first blood. And whoever's injured, then the war is over. You injure somebody on the other side and then it's game over. Everybody goes home and the side that drew blood is the winner. So that's a sort of Stone Age form of warfare. But the white way of warfare is an intensive way of warfare. Very intensive. And it's actually a logical form of warfare. Now you get guys like Sun Tzu, who wrote a book on warfare in China 2,500 years ago. And the Jews and the liberals like to pump up anything that's non-white. And they say, Sun Tzu, he knew the best how to fight war. Napoleon and Caesar, Frederick the Great, Hitler, von Manstein, Robert E. Lee of the Confederates. None of these white men knew how to fight a war. Sun Tzu knew how to fight a war. Now that is actually rubbish. And if Sun Tzu's methods worked, then why didn't the Chinese conquer the whole world? And the Mongols, who were the greatest warriors who came out of Asia, certainly didn't use Sun Tzu's methods. Sun Tzu's methods are much more similar to the Jewish way of thinking. It's full of deception. It's full of all kinds of sneaky concepts. And it's not really about actual fighting. In the white way of war, actual fighting is the real kicker. That's the thing that really makes the difference. And don't believe that whites don't know how to fight. Whites know how to fight better than anybody else. Why do you think we have conquered virtually every continent except Asia? And in ancient times, we did conquer chunks of Asia as well. In more modern times, we've conquered North America, South America, Africa, and we conquered these places with ease. If you look at how the Spaniards conquered South America, you'll be astounded how few Spaniards were actually involved in the military aspect of things. A few hundred Spaniards, sometimes as little as 200, overthrew entire empires. And they did it with great cunning and also with careful alliances. And they had their technology with them. Whites have always used the best technology they can find for warfare. But anyway, returning to South Africa, you get people who now talk about warfare. And as usual, the Saarlanders are misrepresenting things, drawing the wrong conclusions, and so forth. I still want to make a video and mention whether the Saarlanders got their inspiration from a chapter in my book. In my book, Government by Deception, I had a chapter called The White's Last Stand. And I indeed based it on the concept that came from Sinner van Rensburg of a mass attack on the whites. I liked this idea, the mass attack on whites, because it was something I'd never thought of before. And I began to look into that. So I put a tremendous amount of work into that chapter, even though the chapter only contains a couple of pages that relate to fighting. But every word in that chapter, every word, every sentence was very carefully constructed. I read it, I reread it, read it again, fixed it, and made sure that every single word and sentence was put in its proper context. And I think that the Saarlanders took one of the sentences in my book and they took it completely out of context, and they're doing the opposite, the very opposite of what I actually wrote in my book. And it's a topic I'll come back to. Because I was quite sure that when I wrote that chapter, that I'd got it dead right. That everything in there was very important, very specific, and very accurate. And I thought that it was quite clear from that chapter, quite clear in your face, that whites stand a massive chance of winning outright in an all-out war. But perhaps people looked at some of the stuff I presented and drew other conclusions. But I tried to make it as clear as possible without boasting about it, that I thought whites stood a massive chance of survival in an all-out war. Now, people tell me that the Saarlanders run around with photographs of the war in Bosnia and Serbia, and they've got all these European wars, and they're using those European wars as the very basis for giving the reasons why they must engage in their stupid strategy. But if you're going to compare things, you should compare apples with apples. We have fought the blacks for decades. And in much earlier times, before the Boer War, we'd fought the blacks over centuries. We've fought the blacks in modern times, when they had tanks and MiG aircraft even. So there's nothing about the blacks that we don't know. We've seen all their methods of fighting. We've seen what they are capable of. We have tons and tons of data from not only South Africa, but from about five other different countries in Southern Africa where we fought the blacks intensely. The blacks have attacked us on a small scale, tens of thousands of times, maybe even more. We've attacked the blacks on a small scale. We've had medium-sized battles. We've had big battles. Blacks have attacked us in large number. We've attacked them in large number. We've fought all kinds of battles against these blacks. And we've fought it with modern weapons. We've fought it on all kinds of different terrain. We've fought in towns. We've fought in dense bush. We've fought on flat ground in semi-desert. We've fought the blacks on the ground. We've attacked them from the air. We've done all kinds of things. One has to be very careful when you start drawing parallels between fighting in different countries, different nations. You need to make sure that You have valid comparisons, valid data. If we went, for example, and pulled out, let's say, Stalingrad, and studied Stalingrad, and said that fighting between whites and blacks in the city would be like Stalingrad, there could be many problems with that sort of comparison. And you need to be very careful what comparisons you draw. And none is better than having fought these people before in our conditions, because there are lots of different things. If you look at war in Europe, Europe has got more roads. It's got a different climate. It's got different levels of industrialization and transport. All of these things play a big role in the war. You need to look at the IQ of the people involved. You need to look at their racial capabilities. There are lots and lots of things you need to look at in order to make sure that your comparison is as close as possible. Otherwise, the conclusions you're going to draw are rubbish. So when it comes to experience, I think we've got tons and tons of experience, including veterans who actually fought in battle, high-ranking officers who commanded battles and were in the military their whole lives. We've got tons and tons of actual real-world experience about fighting here in Southern Africa. And the conditions and the weapons haven't really changed much since then. And the whole strategic setup is still very similar in many ways. So let's look at the land seizures without compensation. When this government, under this scumbag communist billionaire called Ramaphosa, said that the ANC must make it their highest priority to seize land without compensation, this to me was the same as a declaration of war. And having seen what has happened in Zimbabwe, I knew that this is the beginning of big trouble. This is huge trouble. This flattened Zimbabwe, and it caused the vast majority of the whites to get out of the country. And I'm talking the vast majority of the last few whites who were left in the country. The white population was down from the 277,000 in the days of Rhodesia down to about 100,000. And about 70% of that 100,000 left the country. Not to mention hundreds of thousands of black middle class, not to mention millions of normal blacks left Zimbabwe and continue to leave Zimbabwe to this day. The conditions in Africa are different to the conditions in the Middle East, to the conditions in Europe. You cannot compare them on many levels. There are many, many things that are different. And there are many things that you cannot predict. But there are things that we can predict, not only from the wars of whites against blacks, but blacks against blacks. There are many things in Africa that actually work quite differently to the rest of the world. Some of these things are bad for whites, but there are many things that are good for whites. Things that happen in Africa that you don't see anywhere else. And things that will happen again in Africa for which there is no parallel anywhere else. Now, when Mugabe went and seized the farms, Mugabe actually called it a war. He called it the Third Chimurenga. And a Chimurenga is a war. In fact, he even wrote a book, and I've got a copy of the book. He wrote a book called The Third Chimurenga. This is because there had been two wars between the whites and blacks in Zimbabwe in a period of 90 years, or rather, should I say, Rhodesia, in a period of 90 years. And Mugabe regarded the seizing of the farms as the third war, and he even raised troops for it. He even called up 200,000 blacks and armed them and created a strange kind of army, a sort of militia army. And that army didn't have normal uniforms, but that army went and killed, murdered, raped, tortured, set things on fire. It engaged in stacks of violence, and never at any time did the whites of Britain or America or Europe ever consider that they are looking at a military operation. Never at any time did they say there is an actual war against the whites. And yet, it was a war. He knew it was a war. He called it a war. He wrote a book that was used as a training manual for the young blacks who were called up. They were called up and moved into units, and those units were told to operate in a certain way. They were not a part of the Zimbabwean army. They operated completely differently. And the newspapers and the liberals, and even many of the whites, said, there's just this black violence. There's this black violence. It's a sort of a crazy violence, and they don't really set out to kill us. But actually, it is a violence. It is a war. But it's a war that you don't recognize. And this war was fought, and it was used to smash white farmers who were not willing to give up their land. It was used to murder, torture, kill black workers for the farmers. It was used to murder, torture, kill, rape people who supported the opposition political party. A whole war was fought, and nobody recognized it as a war. Yet he called up and armed 200,000 blacks, a number far greater than the army. And they functioned through command structures. And the army and the intelligence went and grabbed large numbers of black civilians, chucked them on trucks, and sent them off to go and invade white farms. And so the farmers would see these large numbers of blacks arriving, and they wouldn't realize that actually the intelligence people, the army commanders, had actually looked at which farmers should be knocked out first, which farmers were the biggest threat. And then suddenly they arrange large numbers of blacks to come there, mixed in with militia, as well as actual army commanders and officers in civilian clothing walking around with AK-47s, so that the white farmers and their black workers cannot fight against them. Right in the very, very beginning of these farm invasions, there were actual battles that were fought. There were actual battles where a white farmer with his farm workers fought against the black invaders and chased them off the farm. I don't know how many of these battles took place, but I got the impression that there were about 4 or 5 such instances where the white farmer and his workers chased off the invaders. And then the army and the government, realizing that the farmer and his workers can beat their invaders, that's when they brought in the military officers and others in civilian clothing with AK-47s in the event that they need to fight against the farmer and his workers. And once they came with their AK-47s and their form of violence, then all the farm invasions were, let's call it, more peaceful. Farmers got beaten, workers got beaten, but there was no fight back and no ability to push the invaders off the land. So many people don't even know and don't even realize that there was a lot of violence. There were even occasions where blacks who voted for the ruling Communist Party and blacks who were in the MDC, the opposition that was funded by the whites, there were even battles fought between all those blacks. And in those battles, there were casualties. And from what I could pick up, there were possibly battles where as many as 1,000 people, 1,000 blacks, were fighting each other. And people were seriously injured and some were killed. And these things raged on for years. It reached its peak around about 2008 to 2010. So from the year 2000, for the next 8 to 10 years, this violence continued and it raged across Zimbabwe. Yet nobody in the world called it a war, but it was a type of war, a type of race war, and a type of civil war. And the government won that war, and many, many blacks were also killed, among the couple of whites who were killed. And there were many, many injuries, large numbers of people tortured, etc. And I've posted some photos of these things in the past. Now, as far as I'm concerned, when Mugabe invaded the farms in Zimbabwe, this was a sign that this is the beginning of the end. This is where the government is coming to destroy the whites. They're coming to destroy them because they're doing too well. In the case of Zimbabwe, the whites were funding the political opposition. The whites and blacks had created a political opposition. The whites, especially the farmers, were funding it. The white farmers were telling their workers, and they had large numbers of workers, they were telling their workers, vote against the government. And that is why Mugabe came to destroy the white farmers in order to destroy the blacks who were going to vote him out of power. And the blacks did win a number of elections, but the government just lied and cheated about it and kept itself in power anyway. And the Western world knows that a certain number of those elections were totally fraudulent, and neither Britain nor America, as usual, do anything. There's a lot more that happened over and above that. Mugabe smashed other blacks. He made almost a million blacks homeless. He did lots of things. Lots of things that you don't hear about in the Western world. And nobody said this is a civil war. This is a civil war and a race war aimed at destroying the whites and destroying all the blacks who are friendly to the whites. Liberals in South Africa, being the bunch of fools and idiots and traitors that they are, completely misrepresent things in Zimbabwe and in South Africa, and they do not realize the point at which the ANC government in South Africa will use violence, and the point at which the ANC in South Africa will start to kill other blacks who are friendly to white people. The bottom line is that there were huge problems in Zimbabwe. And I will tell you that I've dug into that situation a lot. I was close to it. I spoke to many people, blacks, whites. There were many angles of this that I was involved in. And I want to tell you, it was a type of warfare. Definitely the third Chimurenga was real. And if you go on the internet, you'll even find that blacks have written about the third Chimurenga, and they've told you that this was the war against the whites and the white farmers. This was the point at which the blacks basically decided to expel the whites. So knowing the many things that I know about this, some of which I've not even discussed on my videos, when I saw that the ANC in South Africa wanted to seize land without paying for it, Remember that the ANC already had a huge budget in the 1990s to seize land already. They had a budget of tens of billions of rands to buy out all the farms they wanted to buy out. They did buy out thousands of farms. They acknowledge that they still have at least 4,000 farms still in government possession. As part of the process, they had allowed blacks to put in land claims across South Africa for land anywhere in South Africa, farmland, land in cities, industrial land. And they had a process, and they had a cut-off date for that process. And tens of thousands of land claims were put in. They then created a court system to go through these claims to see if they had any validity. They went and processed these claims. Then came the deadline. Then they extended the deadline. And then they extended the deadline again. I think they extended the deadline at least twice. So blacks had tons of time to put in all kinds of land claims for all kinds of pieces of property across every inch of South Africa. And there's a court system, the Land Claims Court, which is about 15 kilometers from where I live. And the Land Claims Court went and processed these claims. Of course, most of the judges in it, I think, are all non-white. And another thing about Zimbabwe. When they seized land in Zimbabwe, there was a lot of farms that had been bought by the white farmers under the current Zimbabwean government. These were not colonial farms. These were not farms from the time of Rhodesia. These were not farms that whites had seized 100 years ago and kept. These were farms that had been bought under the current system. The same thing is true for South Africa. There are farms that whites have bought, large numbers of farms that have been bought under the current government. In other words, they are legal under the current system. But now the government wants to seize those properties. So these are among the hypocrisies that occur when they come after these farms. These blacks are masters at the art of coming up with bogus logic to excuse violent actions. This is how they fought us. This is how this game has been played for decades and decades. And it was quite clear to me when they started this nonsense in South Africa that now they have to seize farms without paying for them. That this brings us to a whole new level. And these farms that they want to seize without paying for them, this is after they've had a process that's been running since 1996. I've even been to farms that were bought out in 1996, and the blacks don't farm there, and the blacks do nothing there. These blacks do not need land. These blacks just live there, and they get these pieces of land, and they do nothing with it. Or sometimes they even sell it. And many times they and their buddies just go and live there. And there are even farms where the white farmer has bought a new farm with the money from his sale to the government. He's bought a new farm and he's come and he's rented property on his old farm because the blacks are doing nothing on the old farm. Huge farms that were going concerns, that had big businesses, some of them among the biggest in the world, were bought in running order and totally collapsed. They didn't just buy rubbish. They bought, in fact, the best of the best. And still these things have collapsed. Now, these blacks are claiming, 24 years later, these blacks are claiming that they still need land, that they don't have enough land to farm on. These blacks also can farm in former Bantustans, in former homelands. In a homeland, a black guy can go and farm anywhere he wants to. He can build a house anywhere he wants to. I've been to those places. Those places still exist. So why is it that this government now claims that it needs more land from the whites? The whites own about 22% of the land area of South Africa. The government's got thousands of other farms that it's not given to the blacks. The government doesn't need to destroy other farms, but clearly there are ulterior motives at work, including the fact that some of the farms that they've targeted have got big deposits of minerals. And there is talk that various companies are going to get those farms and are going to mine there. So that doesn't sound like blacks who need land. That doesn't sound like blacks who need to farm, does it? So that is the situation in South Africa. A totally bogus situation, as bogus as the situation in Zimbabwe was. So when Ramaphosa, the liar and two-faced bastard that he is, communist and Jew-friendly piece of scum, when Ramaphosa announced this thing, that they need to seize land, I immediately thought that the right thing to do is for the whites to go to war over this. And I want to mention something else. Only 30% of the land claims in South Africa are on farms. The other 70% are in suburbs and industrial properties and city centers, like the center of Pretoria. There are land claims for enormous amounts of property that is not farmland. And yet the government, in its legal structure, has said that it can take land that is even in the suburbs. It can take any of this land. It can take commercial property. If there's some dumb land claim on something, they can come and take it all. Not only are they going to come and take it all, but they want to take it without paying a cent for it. In fact, among the land claims that were settled in the past, there are mines. There are mines worth billions of rands that have been handed over to blacks. They can take anything. They can come and take a multi-story building. They can take factories. They can seize up entire suburbs or city centers where they need it, or claim they need it. So anyway, when I looked at this thing, I immediately thought the right thing for the whites to do is to go to war over this issue. If they're going to come for our property, it's time to pull out the guns. It's time to fight these people. And I sat and I thought about that. I thought that would be the right thing to do, that the whites should gather together, pull out their weapons, and say, if you start taking farms without paying for it, in other words, stealing it, you scum, if you start stealing the farms and the other property, we will defend it with our lives. We will either stop you from taking it, or if you seize it by force, we will come and we will kill whoever is there and we will seize it by force back again. That was my kind of thinking when I looked at this thing. I thought, this is really the proper response. Because as you will learn if you study the history of Southern Africa, these blacks basically engage in warfare without formally declaring war, without saying that the army is going to come and do something. They may send the police. And you will look on it as a police action. They will see it as warfare. And if you go and you fight the police, then you'll be in the wrong. And in fact, Ramaphosa himself has said it. He said that any whites who resist this, any people who resist this, will be regarded as criminals. And of course, warfare is illegal, basically. You can't just go and engage in war against the state. The state controls the legal system. The state will determine what is legal and what is not legal. And anything the state does is legal. Everything you do against the state will be illegal. But it's the state, it's the black majority in the parliament who have said that this law must go through, and it's been passed. And they said that in March they would start seizing farms, and they had a short list of 200 farms. Now, there have been very rich farmers on that list, and those farmers have said they will fight this tooth and nail. And they've gone, and AfriForum has gone, and everybody's gone to courts, and they are going to try and use the legal process. And of course, the legal process should fail, but maybe they can slow the legal process down as much as they can, buy time, and create new legal hassles in order to slow things down. This is probably as much as they can do, but can they really stop it? And the answer is no. Except if they get very lucky in certain cases, maybe they can. But in most cases, they won't be able to. So when I looked at this thing of seizing farms, which could later balloon into seizing properties, chunks of cities, and all kinds of enormous property, I thought to myself, all these whites, all these landowners especially, should really get together and start doing something, because ultimately this could affect maybe a huge chunk of the white population, that people could lose everything, including your house. And this thing is huge. I thought that a war should be fought over this. I really thought this was absolute justification for a war. And I'll be honest with you, I think the government coming and stealing your property, I think that it is a good thing to fight for. But I don't have any dreams about the matter. I don't think people will fight. I don't think even those rich farmers will fight. Maybe, if we're lucky, the odd farmer might stay in his house and say, "You're not going to get my property, you'll get it over my dead body." Maybe one or two or five farmers will do that. And if they do, I doubt anybody's going to help them. If they do, I doubt anybody's going to lift a finger. Even the whites will just leave them to die. Of course, you also do get white farmers who became very rich and who were playing the liberal game. And they were happy to hobnob with the rich blacks. And now they're finding that the rich blacks are knifing them in the back. But these farmers were hobnobbing with the blacks, assisting the blacks, working with the blacks, shafting their own white people. And maybe some of these farmers don't deserve the support of the mass of whites. It's possible that there are some of them who don't. And the same will be true for business people who are super rich and stinking rich, who might, in the years to come, lose enormous chunks of territory, maybe skyscrapers and supremely valuable properties will be lost, and the other whites will just look on them and say, "Ah, these people screwed us up our asses. These people fired us. These people were in with the blacks. Why should I go and pick up a rifle for that rich, super rich white scumbag who knifed me in the back. And I think it's very possible that large numbers of these rich will discover, like the rich whites of Zimbabwe discovered, that you can hobnob with these rich blacks, but they control the government, they control the police, they control the army, they control also some secret militias, and they can come and just destroy you. And that's that. So I think there is a bit of a class aspect to this, of why should the common white man stand up and risk his life for the rich scumbag who screwed him up his ass, drove him out of his job, replaced him with a black? And why should the whites give a damn when the rich lose everything? But as a general principle, I do think that fighting for our homes and our properties is a very valid thing to do. So I think that for the most part, apart from trying to use various methods of lobbying and some legal stuff and a few other business and diplomatic tricks, I think that for the most part, the vast majority of whites will do absolutely nothing. And that includes all the right-wing organizations. And I think that when the time comes, the government's going to come, it's going to start taking farms. I keep using the word take, and take is the wrong word. Steal. They're going to steal the farms. They don't take, they steal. That's what they do. That's what the government exists for, is to steal from the white man. The ANC is out to steal from the white. They also steal from the blacks, but that's a whole other story. And it's not taking, it's stealing. It's stealing something that you paid for. You paid for it, you can prove that you paid for it. All the evidence that you own it is sitting there in the property registry. It belongs to you, you've got the title deeds. Now the government's going to tell you that your title deeds aren't worth anything. So I sat and I thought about the whites and I thought, well, can we survive without the farms? And we don't know how many of the farms the government's going to take. But once you open this door, you might never be able to shut this door. And once you open this door, it can just carry on for years and years. And they can just drive whites out all over the country in any way that suits them. And it's a Pandora's box. And I really think that the proper response to this should be warfare. And that if whites do not resist this thing at some point in time, we are opening the door to our destruction, our final destruction. Then we're going to end up with nothing. No place to live, and we're either going to be on the ash heap or we're going to have to leave the country. My view is simply that we should try and stop this thing at the outset. We should be trying to stop the seizure of farms at the outset. They shouldn't be allowed to steal a property, even once. If they steal the first property, all of us should have our weapons and should go to that property and fight for that property. Because if we don't do it for the first property and we just sit back and leave it, then they're going to take the second and the third and the fourth and the 400th and the 4,000th. And so it will carry on. And if they can steal farms and can steal houses and can steal commercial property, then they can steal everything. They could just go and expand those laws to steal even other things. There's no end to this in sight. However, there are lots of people in South Africa who prefer to keep their heads in the sand. They prefer to just shut up, and if it doesn't affect them, then they'll do nothing. And there are large numbers of whites in this group. And I think that the vast majority will sit quietly as long as they don't lose their property, and they will do nothing. And so I think that there are also others who have the view, they're totally delusional, they have the view that, no, the government's not really going to actually do it. This is just cheap election talk. They're not actually going to do it. So maybe it's going to be good that the government does take or steal one farm or 10 farms or 100 farms or the 200 on its original list. Let them steal those farms. Let everybody see that the government comes and steals farms, some of them worth hundreds of millions of rands. Let them come and steal these farms and let everybody realize that the government is serious about screwing us over. And then, as they continue with this, then people must realize this will never end. This is the nightmare. So maybe when everybody sees that the farms are being stolen and the government steals and it lies and it steals some more, that they will realize this government is out to get you and we need to fight them at some point before they steal everything. So I think that the second scenario is the more likely. Let these bastards come and steal the farms. Let it wake everybody up. Let people's eyes go open. Let them see, here they are, stealing like Mugabe. And there's an interesting twist to this. If you listen carefully to these ANC pieces of shit who rule this country, then you will notice that in actual fact, they know many things. For example, they said at a point, we will see to it that there is no violence like in Zimbabwe. And the implication is that they know that the violence in Zimbabwe could have been controlled. And now they're assuring us, we're going to steal it, but we're not going to steal it violently. We're going to steal it quietly. Oh, that's such good news. I must tell you, that is such good news. Such rubbish, I must tell you. When will people realize you're dealing with people who are scum, who have a desire for power, a mad lust for power? This is not about democracy. And now that government is going to go and stir up all the blacks against the whites. And guess what, my friends? The possibility exists that the ANC, which many people claimed was dead, especially liberals, and a rule for you, never listen to a liberal, that another lesson that whites are going to learn is that all these pleasant blacks that you've been so nice to, and you've been so pleasant to them, and you've tried to treat them so well, that these same common blacks are going to go and vote. And they're going to vote for the ANC so that the ANC can come and steal everything that belongs to you. That the wealthy blacks and the poor blacks are all going to decide that the best thing for this country is to steal that which belongs to you and to me. So you will see how all this effort has been wasted on these people. That the blacks in vast numbers will rush to vote for the ANC to steal our stuff. And unlike what the liberal scum and Jewish scum have been telling you, the blacks are not on our side. You will see we are alone. And you'll find that the liberals and the Jews are sitting on the side of the blacks and the government who is doing the stealing. You will find we are on our own. So that is my view of the sad, sad, ugly situation that awaits us. And that I think everybody is going to be sitting back and watching in shock as the blacks start stealing and voting for our stuff, to seize our stuff criminally, but because they control the government, they'll make it legal to steal from whites and to steal anything they want from whites or anybody else that they feel like stealing from. They may even steal from other non-whites. They might even go and steal from the Indians or the coloureds or even from other blacks when it suits them. The law is very open. They've opened a door. But first on the menu is white people. The first people who are going to be stolen from are the whites. So as far as I'm concerned, that is what I see as what's coming. Now, let's talk about warfare, because people have been coming to me and talking about war. And especially this guy who has a business, and he was very, very, very concerned about the future and warfare. And he actually belongs to multiple right-wing groups. And he was even trying to make contact with other military people to find out what the hell is going to happen. So we spoke about war and what could war be like and what exactly is going to happen. Because he was saying that from various sources, be it the Seidlanders and their stupid prophecies, but from various sources, there is the possibility of a war in South Africa. And the Seidlanders are constantly running around telling everybody there's going to be a war. And people think that a war is a bad thing. And I disagree. Genocide, murder, continual murder of whites, farm murders, the murder of tens of thousands of whites in the last 20 years. Genocide, that's really genocide. Whether it's a slow genocide or a fast genocide. Now that to me is the worst case scenario. Where you sit and they come and they kill you one by one. And they carry on doing this for decade after decade. So if you want to know what's worse than war, genocide is worse than war. Maybe fast genocide is worse than slow genocide. But it's genocide nevertheless. So there are people who've walked around like the Seidlanders and many others, and they've said South Africa could explode into a civil war. It's going to explode into a war. My problem with that is if you look at the mechanisms of warfare, then you need to ask yourself, how is this explosion into war actually going to take place? Because genocide is when one side is killing the other side and the other side is unarmed and isn't fighting back. In order for there to be a civil war or a race war, and there are some interesting differences between them, in order for there to be a civil war or a race war, you need somebody else to be fighting back. And the people who should be fighting back are on our side, the white side. So who on our side is going to actually fight in this war? Now, if you listen to the Saidlanders tell you the country is going to explode into a civil war. And while this civil war is taking place, the Saidlanders are going to be fleeing for their lives in convoys. Now, if most of the whites on the right wing are members of the Saidlanders, then it may mean that most of the whites are fleeing, and the question is, who is going to actually do the fighting? In fact, that's my problem, is who is going to fight? Who on our side is actually going to fight? Apart from one lone farmer or two lone farmers shooting from their houses at the police, I really don't see how we can explode into war. And maybe we should look at what is warfare? What is warfare actually? There is a misconception among people that warfare is just violence. That the people who are even the best at warfare are maybe the blacks, because the blacks do a lot of violence. So, because blacks do lots of violence and lots of crime, people think, well, blacks are the best at warfare because whites don't do crime and whites almost never engage in violence, except on odd occasions when they're drunk or when somebody's slept with somebody's wife. But for the most part, there isn't actually actual warfare and violence that comes from whites as a group. So let me define what warfare is by my definition. Warfare is first and foremost competition. It is a competition between two sides. It is a competition that cannot be resolved by talking. And don't listen to liberals, Jews, and priests and psychologists who tell you that every situation can be solved and resolved just by talking. These people are either liars or they are fools. In the real world, there are many situations that cannot be resolved, especially when they are important. The most important things cannot be resolved through talking. Nations wage wars. People, groups of peoples wage wars because there comes a time where nobody wants to give up his position. So war is first and foremost competition, and secondly, it's natural. It's natural. Violence is used, even nature uses violence. So don't walk around with the rubbish idea that these things are unnatural and need to be avoided at all costs. There are times where people have done their utmost to avoid wars, and it didn't work. There was a time in Europe, for example, between Christians in Germany, hundreds of years ago, before the 30 Years' War, where Christians struck deals with each other, and they had deals, and these deals were renewed, and they kept these deals and agreements between them for up to 60 years in the hope of avoiding war. And in the end, Christians slaughtered each other like dogs in the 30 Years' War. So don't think that you can keep some things at peace all the time. There comes a time where people cannot stand it anymore at all. You have one side that's feeling confident, and they're pushing and pushing and pushing and pushing, and the others are just taking it and taking it. And until somebody pushes back and pushes back hard, that is the only time you get war. So this notion that South Africa is just going to explode into war you need to ask yourself a few questions about war. What is war? War is not only competition, but it is a competition that uses violence. Now, it's not violence that just is random violence. It is the blacks who have given us the impression that warfare is a random violence. Or rather, when blacks carry out wars that appear like random violence, we don't even recognize it as a war, even though in their minds they know it is a war. So that maybe is the way that the black Africans, the communists of modern times, wage war. But the way whites have waged war, and why whites are the masters of war, is because war is about using violence for a specific reason. They use violence in a very specific, targeted way. And that is what you know as war. In warfare, in Western warfare, you can even say there are rules of war. Normally, unless you are Britain and America, normally you don't kill women and children, except if you're Britain and America, or a communist sitting in Russia or China. Most of the time, you kill only other male combatants, and you focus on an army. In fact, a very important military history lesson of warfare that actually makes the whites of Southern Africa look very bad is the following. This has been said by many military people, and here it is. There is no instance in history where any army could defeat another country or state or people except by defeating its army. So let me just make that clear. There is no instance in history where any army can defeat another group of people except by defeating the other army. The point being that if you have an army that is defending you, even if it can't defend you all the time, there are no instances in history where people have been defeated without one army crushing the other army. The only place where this has happened is in Southern Africa. In Southern Africa, we whites have laid down our weapons even though our armies were never crushed. But in the rest of the world, even when they murder civilians, armies have fought until the army is physically smashed. So we are unique in that we have laid down our weapons, even at times when we were never defeated militarily. This in and of itself is completely against the rules of military history. In all other cases, armies have had to be smashed. And there are times when armies have not even been able to defend all their population or all their places. A perfect example is the Seven Years' War in Prussia, where Frederick the Great was unable to defend his entire territory. So there were times he had to leave huge chunks of his territory undefended, and even his capital city was attacked and invaded and smashed because he was unable to defend it, because there were more important things that he had to defend, and there were more important military actions that he had to take. The purpose of an army is to defend the people on its side and to smash the enemy's army. And if you're a douchebag, you may decide to kill some of the enemy's civilians, but that is not the normal standard. So if we return to the issue of South Africa exploding into civil war, then you need to ask the question, if South Africa is to explode into civil war, who is going to carry out the violence on which side? Who is going to use violence, and what are they going to use the violence for? Are the blacks going to use violence against the white civilian population? Are the blacks going to use violence to obtain farms or certain pieces of land? Or is it that whites are going to use violence? Are whites going to use violence against black civilians? Are whites going to use violence against the government, against the police? Are whites going to set out to assassinate or kill people? Are whites going to use violence to stop the seizure of a farm? Are whites going to use violence in order to get back a farm that had been stolen by the black government? Are whites going to use violence to stop government officials or police or anybody else from moving into a certain area to either investigate a farm or to seize a farm? Are the blacks going to bring in the police to kill a farmer who resists handing over his farm? Will they call in the army to come and kill three farmers because they are resisting the handover of their farm? Is the farmer going to shoot the black government official who comes to tell him he's got to leave and vacate his farm immediately? These are the real questions. The question is, who is going to use violence? Is the government going to use violence, or are the whites going to use violence? And if so, under which conditions? And if the government sends the police to go and remove a white farmer because he doesn't want to give up his land, and the farmer and his pals and the right wing don't fight back, then there's peace. Then the one side is given in to the other side. Then there's no war. But if the police come and the government issues a order to a farmer to vacate his farm, and the farmer decides not to vacate his farm, and the officials come back to him and they say, listen, you've got to get out now. We've waited for long enough. We've extended the deadline over and over. You must leave in the next 24 or 48 hours. And the farmer still refuses. And the police now are brought in because the farmer is now a criminal. And the farmer shoots at the police and the police shoot at him. And eventually, after a gunfight with some people injured and maybe the farmer killed, then we could say there was a battle. Let's call it a battle for technical terms. Even if it's two people shooting at each other, we can classify it as, let's call it a battle, even though it's small. It could be a skirmish, but for technical purposes, we can call it a contact or a battle. So there's a tiny battle. Now, in order for there to be a war, you need more than one battle. You need lots of battles. There could be a short period of time between the battles, or there could be a long period of time between the battles. You might have a battle and not have another instance of violence for a month, 6 months, a year, 3 years. So when you talk about a war, there are lots of things you need to look at, and a war implies some kind of violence. Of course, there are also things that can be done secretly. Maybe some people decide to go and murder the farmer. Maybe the government decides to murder the farmer. Maybe the whites decide to murder a government official. These things could also constitute part of the war, but it would be an invisible part of the war. Somebody would die, and we might or might not have much in the way of evidence that this person was killed by the other side. It might look like an accident. So there are many things that go into this concept of a war. And you need to remember that wars in Africa do not have the same intensity as wars that are properly fought by white Western nations, especially the wars in Europe. The American Civil War, or the War of Northern Aggression, as it should be called, those wars are really white-on-white wars, and it follows the pattern of Europe. The time when the British invaded South Africa to steal the gold and diamonds from the Boers, the Second Anglo-Boer War, now that is also a proper war, fought properly according to Western standards. Well, maybe with a dirty war on the side of the British, who were busy burning down 30,000 farms and shooting millions of animals and rounding up the white women and children and sticking them in concentration camps where at least 32,000 of them died. So the Boers at least fought a clean war, but the British, as always, fight a dirty war. The point is that even in Africa, you only really see these conflicts breaking out in the Western style when there are Western people involved in them. Another example is maybe the battles in Angola with the Russians, the Eastern Europeans, the Cubans coming in and beefing up the other side and turning it into a proper war, the way that you know war as it is in the Western world. But in Africa, you will find there are many wars, especially in modern times, where the blacks will fight you, and they won't fight you with the police, they won't fight you with the army, they'll send somebody to come and murder somebody. And they'll hide their violence behind children, behind women. They'll have all kinds of other things that come and make it look like a protest in order for them to hide the fact that really their real goal is violence. A simple example is the time when the blacks burned the houses down in Kulini in 2017. There's an example where the blacks were preparing all kinds of hectic violence, and they pulled some of it off. But if you are talking about South Africa going to war, you need to ask who is going to go to war. And war requires both sides. Now, the advantage lies on the side of the government. The government has created the law, and the government has said we can steal these farms from these whites without paying a cent. And anybody who resists it is a criminal. So if the white farmer resists it, he's a criminal. He can be arrested, put on trial, thrown in jail. If anybody goes and assists the farmer and they fight and do things, then everybody can be put on trial and thrown into jail. You cannot have a war in the country against the government without your actions being illegal. Anybody who resists the government is by definition a criminal. And the world won't regard any of this as a war, and they won't even look at the rights of those whites in any way, except as criminal actions. In order for this to be recognized as a war, there needs to be a whole lot more violence. And until then, it is merely a criminal action, and the people who perpetrated it are up for jail time. And if they resist with guns, they may have to be shot. So all whites who resist this will be regarded as criminals. Now you have to ask this question. If the farmer is willing to use violence to protect his farm, it's his property, who else is going to be with the farmer? Suppose a right-wing group says that it will stand by the farmer. Then it makes them also criminals. And whoever says that they will stand by the farmer and they will defend him and defend his property, they too will be viewed as criminals. And even them just maybe even saying it might constitute some kind of threat. So the question is, who else is going to be willing to stand by the farmer or farmers who decide that they're not going to hand over their property to the government thieves who come to steal it? And I will tell you that in my experience, you're not going to find many people willing to bring some kind of nasty things upon their own heads for somebody else, unless there is some common thread that links these people together. So I think that maybe, one or two farmers might do something out of desperation, maybe, but maybe even not. Like one of the farmers who's going to lose his property, he actually owns several properties and he's extremely rich. Is he going to go and fight for his one farm when he's got maybe three farms in total? I doubt it. I think there are many points at which whites would have reason to fight and defend their home for their livelihood, as it's the only thing they have. And I think there are many reasons why whites, including the farmers, should fight to defend that which is theirs from government thieves, because that's what these people are. But I think in practice that there are going to be many other soft mechanisms that are going to come into play whereby the whites are basically going to be cheated out of what is theirs, and most others will just stand by and watch somebody else lose it. If you look at the whites, large numbers of whites, including myself, have been driven out of our jobs. But how many other whites came to defend you and protect you when you were losing your livelihood? And for the most part, in fact, almost 100% of the times, almost nobody else will stand up for you. In fact, nobody will stand up because they don't want your problem to impact them. They don't want your problem to become a problem in their life. And for the most part, I think that until white people feel a common bond and a common thread and a common feeling that if we let somebody's house or business or property or even job, if we allow somebody to lose their job, their property, their business, their farm, their home, their apartment, that until such time as whites feel a common thread, that they see that man losing his farm, that man losing his apartment, that woman losing her job, that this is also going to happen to me at some point. That person is on the front line for us. That it's not just going to be that person that loses it. It's going to come to all of us sooner or later. Until such a time as whites feel that kind of threat and appreciate that kind of situation and appreciate that kind of bond and need to stand by each other, that the pain of the one will become everybody's pain. That until white people think in this way and realize that we need to stand together as a group, that one farmer having his farm stolen is going to be the precursor to my house being stolen, to your apartment being stolen, to his business being stolen, to that other person's industrial property being stolen. Until whites think like this and realize the commonality of our situation, until such a time, there is not any chance that I can see of a war. Unless somebody's got some kind of clever plan, either to murder government officials quietly when nobody's watching, or the blacks who get onto the farm find that their water's been poisoned and somebody's dying from poison, or somebody's put a bomb somewhere and when some person opens the door they get blown away. Until such kinds of acts of violence start appearing, there isn't even the slightest indication that we are going to war. And if we go to war, who's going to fight? Who's going to even stand together and say, this organization and this organization and this organization will resist that government action on the basis that we will fight? If you cross that line, we're going to start shooting. So until people get to the point where somebody actually does something or is willing to make a public statement on something, or people are willing to stand together to defend something, I don't see how it can turn into a war. I can see it being the odd bit of violence, maybe a rare bit of murder, a little bit of violence here and there, and then I see everybody just accepting it as the norm and everyone being quiet until such time as it's that person's turn. Because that is how it's happened to large numbers of people who lost their jobs, lost their livelihoods. And I think that this game is just getting into bigger and bigger stakes. Instead of just one man or one woman losing his job, they're coming for bigger things now. But you cannot have a war until somebody is willing to take physical risks for somebody else. If people do not stand together, you cannot have a war. And certainly there won't be any white liberals on the side that's going to fight, because a white liberal is always running off and making excuses for the government. So it's got to be somebody who's not a liberal, not a communist, not a traitor, not a sellout. You are not going to have a war until somebody or some group is willing to stand for something. And maybe if you have a group that publicly stands for something and makes a statement, you may find a thing that has happened many times in history. And that is that if a group publicly says that they will stand for something, then you might find one person in 10,000 who will come and stand by them. And even that person might only stand by them for a period of time before he runs for the hills. But that is about the only way that things work. Unless you have people willing to stand together, make plans, agree on stuff, do stuff, and say in public what they're going to do, you're not going to get anything. At best, you'll get some quiet murders maybe taking place, some accidents, somebody sets a fire. That might be one way that you could get to a war, is by people doing things quietly. Nobody announces it. Just the next thing you know is somebody gets shot. Another one has an accident. There's a booby trap in a building, in one of the farm buildings. Somebody opens a door and it blows them away. And then you find that somebody had put a explosive device there. There's a car accident, strange car accident that you can't explain, and somebody died. I think it's more likely that if there is going to be any violence, either from the whites or the government, that what will happen will be quiet. The government will send some militia, some blacks that they've armed and trained and prepared for a mission. And they go and they see, there's a problem white man. This problem white man is going to get others to resist. Go and kill him. Go and kill him in some way. Make it look like a robbery. Make it look like an accident. Somebody dies strangely. And then people say, oh, that's a unfortunate accident. He was so important to our side. He died so suddenly, so unexpectedly. I think those are the forms of violence that might occur long before anything else happens. You might, if you're very, very lucky, find five white guys who will go with the farmer and they'll barricade themselves in the building and they'll fight the police until they're dead, or until two or three of them are dead and the other two are injured and they surrender. I think those events, if they happen, we should applaud them. And it's very possible that not even that will happen. I think that for true war to come, you've got to have whites on quite a large scale willing to stand together. And even then, even if you get an organization with, let's say, 100,000 white men who are armed, and they're a form of white militia, 100,000 white men who are armed and ready to fight, and they openly say, we will fight. We will fight the government if they seize that land. Then you will find that the spies, the police, the infiltrators will get in there. They may murder key people. They may have a system whereby when that group of men wants to go into action, that something goes wrong. And they're supposed to get the message to go into action, and for some inexplicable reason, the message doesn't get to them, or the message gets to a couple of them, the rest of them don't get the message. The couple pitch up to what they expect to be a big fight. They find others don't pitch up there, and they either give up and walk away or something. There are many, many mechanisms whereby groups of people can be stopped. A leader could be killed. You can even have the enemy looking for a reason to make you look bad. You might have an enemy, for example, our enemies, they're quite capable of this. if at a point they need an excuse to really clamp down on the whites, they might chuck a bunch of black women and children in a place on a farm and then send a message to this right-wing group indicating to them, this is an urgent call, you've got to get there, there's something there, you've got to shoot whoever you find there. And they get there and they find women and children or something. That's maybe a rather fanciful one, but probably more likely is they get there and they find the actual police there. They shoot the police and then the government says, no, you shot women and children. All these kinds of things are possible. These things are well within the sort of vein of our previous fights with the blacks. For there to be violence that comes from the whites, you have to have something else happening. You either have to have groups very quietly who set out to commit murder or to engage in some kind of act. And then you'll have to be careful because anything that you do could be construed as terrorism. And the moment that you engage in terrorism, then you've got the entire world on the side of the blacks. So that presents you with big problems. But even terrorism alone doesn't mean a war can start. Those Burama who planted all those bombs and who specifically targeted blacks, that is proof that you can't just start a race war. You see, for a war to occur, you need two sides and you need people at a high level on both sides to agree to disagree. The blacks have got a high level side. They have got their politicians. They are officially in power and they can make those kinds of decisions. But we whites don't have that decision making body. We don't have a body that makes our decisions. We don't have our government. We don't have our leaders. There is no white group where whites can agree, now's the time for war, or maybe we try another path. So if there's violence that comes from whites, it's got to be coming from groups, very possibly small groups, very possibly highly covert. And it may even take people a long time to realize that there is even some kind of covert war on the go. That could be how it happens. So the government might at a point recognize, hey, there's something funny here. But you can have wars, and there have been wars, even in Southern Africa, that are totally secret. Somebody gets killed, two sides know that they're busy murdering the other side's people, and the mass of people aren't even aware of it. It just carries on as normal. The British fought an entire war in Malaysia, and they never called it a war. They called it an emergency, and for years there was this emergency, and there were military people running around, and there was actually a war on the go. And the population didn't even realize it. If the whites are at the top of their game, I'm talking the top of the top of the top of their game, then the whites could wage a covert war. A covert war wherein things quietly happen to our enemies. Somebody dies. Somebody gets ill. Some strange accident occurs. And critical people start falling out of the loop. Or, and this is much more likely, somebody who's in a critical position suddenly changes his mind. He just changes his mind for a reason that he never discusses. If we are truly at the top of our game, that could be a way of fighting. A way that nobody can see there's a fight. There's just something that happens and it doesn't get in the newspaper, and suddenly some black person who was in a key position against us suddenly refuses to do something. And no matter what people try and do, this black person doesn't change his mind. He might be willing to lose his job rather than change his mind. And nobody will know why he changed his mind. Nobody will know how the whites got to him or her to change their mind. If we were truly at the top of the pinnacle of our game, that is one way we could do it. A judge who's about to rule on something makes another ruling and won't change that ruling and is willing to risk anger or losing his job. If we truly were at the top of our game, truly the best in the world, that could be one way of doing it. Somebody gets ill. Somebody suddenly just dies. Somebody just changes his mind. Somebody resigns. That could be a way. That could be a way of doing something. But you'd need people who truly are at the top of their game. And I don't know if that's even possible. But I wouldn't completely put it beyond us. I wouldn't completely put it beyond us. We are capable of all sorts of things, very quietly. And that could be one way of doing things. That could be one way. Quietly undermining something, gradually, piece by piece, removing a nut over here, a bolt over there. And slowly, this thing doesn't quite function the way it used to function. A more realistic alternative is something like this. A government official issues an order. And that order has to go to somebody in order to start seizing that farm. That order does not reach that person, and that person doesn't know about it for a week or a month. He doesn't know he was supposed to do something. Only much later do they find out, why didn't you do this? And they go and they look and they see, oh no, I never got the email. Really? Did you send the email? Or some other communication goes wrong. Probably a more realistic one is communications going wrong. That orders are issued. People are supposed to do. Things don't get there. If we were truly at the top of our game, if we were truly at the top of our game, emails would do the rounds telling people to do stuff that they're not supposed to do. An official would get an order coming from his boss, but it would be an order that his boss never gave. And he has to go and do something that he's not supposed to do. If we were truly up on our game, then things like that would happen. Imagine his boss phoning him and telling him, do this, do this, do this, now. And he goes off to do it. And it wasn't his boss who told him. I think in the weird world of the digital age, some of these things could get to happen. There's a database. The database has got names of farms that need to be seized. And suddenly, some of the farms on that list disappear. And other names appear on that database. Those kinds of things, those things might be the kind of thing that could happen if we were up on our game. A guy goes somewhere and he crashes his car. And people say, oh, it's a shame, he's dead now. So those are possibilities. And I'm sure you could think up even more strange things that could be done if you know the procedures. It's hard to do specific stuff like that. What is easier is to intercept things and stop things, break the chain of command. Someone at a high level issues an order to someone at the middle level. The middle level guy doesn't get it. The middle level guy does all kinds of things. A long time later, they find out that he didn't do something that his boss thought he should do. He issues it to the next guy down below him, and that order also doesn't get through. So there could be things that could slow processes down. This is the way to think like a communist. This is the way to think like a Jew. This is the way to think if you can't stop things openly, if you can't do things overtly. That is one way. And some of these methods might, in very rare occasions, be actually possible to pull off. But only if we were at the top of our game. I think that before you can have a war coming from us, you need lots of unhappiness, you need lots of anger, you need to get people fuming mad. Whites have to be fuming mad. And I can tell you that even when people are fuming mad, that still won't start a war. You'll still get the odd guy going and blowing someone away, but he'll be the loner. You will not find that being the norm. For war to come from our side, you need organizations, you need leaders. You need leaders to gather together and issue statements on behalf of their followers. You need to get several leaders together and they have to make a statement. We will do this or we will oppose that. Until you get that, we don't have the means. In fact, and this comes back to military history, when you have groups of leaders making decisions, you will also find that your chance of turning to violence is still not enough. You will find that 10 leaders sit together in a meeting and 8 may be convinced that the time for war is now, and you'll still find that there are 2 that they just can't convince, and the other 2 refuse to go along with it. What is more likely is if you have less leaders, but the leaders have more power. You have 3 guys who make the decision. The chance of getting into a war through 3 is far greater than through 10. Make no mistake about this. This is military history. This is the way things actually do work. I could never see war coming from our side simply through the government applying soft pressure. I would call this soft pressure. Individualistic pressure. Knock out one person at a time. Knock out one farmer. Then 2 farmers. Then 10 farmers. Eventually, after a long time, you get to 40 to 100. I think that is not going to get people to go to war immediately. Many might even leave the country rather. But you need some kind of structure and some kinds of groups on our side. And some of those groups have to be overt. It's got to be somebody who will make a public statement. And from what I can see, nobody on our side makes public statements that are threatening or that indicate any kind of force. So until we have structures with leaders that do that, you're never going to get somebody drawing a line in the sand. And even if they draw a line in the sand verbally, in order for a war to take place, you need to be able to draw the line in the sand physically. If you say to them, "We will not accept it if you do this and this and this. You touch that farm, that's one farm too many." Then what you'll rather find is if somebody states that then they're going to have to draw the line in the sand and be willing to act on that. And that in and of itself is an issue. Somebody says that, but who's going to actually stand there and risk their lives doing it? So until you can get those kinds of things, you can't really have a war. What I thought could kick off a war was the blacks attacking us. For me, the easiest way to get to a war is the blacks openly attacking us and trying to kill us. I always thought this is the most likely thing. This is that Sinner van Rensburg type of rubbish. The blacks come and they try to inundate suburbs and they try to wipe whites out in towns. They try to kill everybody in the town. I thought that that is a much likelier method for getting to war, simply because you will find that nature kicks in. And even if you're a liberal, I assure you, when somebody is coming and trying to bash down your door, is firing shots in through your door or window, chasing you down and shooting at you, you are not going to really do anything. Until that situation comes about, I don't see whites as a group standing together and immediately taking action. Until whites start dying in groups and being attacked in groups, they are not going to do anything. What they will do is that if they see more individuals going down, either losing their jobs, losing their property, there was yet another murder, another in the 80,000th or 90,000th murder of whites. I think those things together combined could eventually make whites gather together in large enough numbers and start looking at themselves and saying, "We really need to do something." And then they're going to have to start working out where exactly do we draw the line? Do we need to protect your house and kill whoever's trying to break into your property? I think that is more likely. That process is definitely underway. That process is definitely underway, where whites are starting to red pill meaning they are starting to see the truth and it's scaring them, and they are starting to see reasons why they need to be afraid and why they need to gather together. But that process can still run for a long time. That process can run for years. You know, that process can carry on, and by then we reach the point where the 1,000th white farmer has had his farm stolen. And we say, "Bloody hell, the 1,000th, this is enough now." And by then you have numbers, you have people feeling much angrier, feeling much more confident, and then maybe people will say, "You know what? They're about to seize the 1,500th farm. And you know what? They're going to do it over our dead fucking bodies. We've had enough of this shit now. And maybe then you'll finally see whites coming in numbers. Maybe some coming with guns, others with cameras. And they say, fuck this shit. Fuck this shit. You take one more fucking piece of land from the whites and we're all going to descend on you. And that, I think, is probably the more likely way this will go. I don't think the government will overtly just attack us. I think if they do attack us, and I've spoken to some military guys about this, I think if they do attack people, they'll gather together some kind of little force. It'll go and kill three people or do something like that. And you'll think it's just another crime. I think that is more likely, that the individual violence will quietly go up and quietly be targeted at certain whites. But I think that there's still quite a process to be followed. And the government anyway will not overtly declare war on the whites. The government will most likely do things hiding behind the blacks like Mugabe did. They will probably bus in 1,000 black women and children. And then behind the black women and children will be another 2,000 blacks with guns. And the cameras will show the women and children, but they won't show the other blacks. And the whites will find that when they shoot back, that the only film footage that gets out is whites shooting women and children, but you won't see all the other black men running around doing their stuff. That won't get onto the news. And there'll be rumors of such things, but the government will deny it. The blacks do seem to have a propensity for using crowds. And if they use crowds, I assure you, women and children and youngsters that appear to be unarmed will be at the front. That will definitely be the case. But rest assured, the blacks will go to great lengths to not make it look like a military attack. They will pretend it's racial stuff. They'll pretend that it's these racist whites who are doing this and that kind of thing. I think there are lots and lots of games that are yet to be played before we can get to a civil war. We might be on the path towards such a thing as whites get more and more unhappy. But it will not happen until such a time as whites start defending actual positions. You know, until whites say government officials not gonna be allowed to enter this farm, government officials not to be allowed to enter this town, or the whites chase the police and the mayor out of a town and the whites seize the town. I don't see any kind of actual combat coming until whites really start standing their ground. And even then, it won't just happen overnight. Even then, there'll be all kinds of political processes, media stuff that'll happen. They will give the whites an ultimatum. You stand back, you got 48 hours. And that kind of thing. There's got to be a point at which whites stand their ground. Until then, I don't easily see a proper conflict developing. But there could be what you could call guerrilla actions on both sides. A bunch of blacks trained sneak into a place, shoot up some whites or shoot up some key whites, or do something like that. Whites sneaking around at night, attacking some place, shooting up some blacks. I think guerrilla stuff is much more likely. and you'll have a period of time that that goes on. That it'll go on for not just days, but weeks, months, maybe even years. That there are these mysterious murders. This bunch of people died. That person got killed. I think those things are more likely before you get to actual warfare. Warfare in the way that the Western people understand, it won't happen the way that you think. I don't think that will happen. The only time that will happen is when whites take a piece of territory and say, this is our territory, these are the rules, nobody's allowed in here. Then you'll have instant warfare. Then it'll be instant. Then you'll have the United Nations. Oh, the British government will be there quickly to tell you, no, no, this is very wrong. And American government will also, oh, these whites need to be bombed. Then you'll see something. But the quiet war, the silent war, the sneaky war, I think this is much more our stuff. It's going to be like crime, but crime gaining momentum until it's like crime on steroids. White woman and her husband shot here. A group of AWB guys were getting together, having a barbecue. Suddenly 20 blacks descend on them and shoot them all dead. Bunch of blacks murdered suddenly. Nobody really knows why they died, but the whites who killed them know exactly what positions they were in, know exactly what kind of threat they were causing, and the whites decided to murder them and get them out of the way. Maybe it's even more likely that we'll return to the kinds of guerrilla warfare and the violence of the past. The blacks plant a bomb here, but I think it'll probably mostly be killing of selected people, I think. Either killing of selected people or killing a bunch of people to send a message of terror. You know, whites killed in some gruesome way, but it's a bunch of them. In this war, it'll probably be mostly guns, the odd hand grenade or RPG, and nothing else. It'll be a real infantry type war, almost a kind of a special forces type thing. A sniper, a guy who's an expert on explosives. I think those things are way more likely than actual full-scale war. The notion of a town or a city being attacked, I can tell you from my past thinking as well as events that have happened since then that I've investigated, like Kulini, I can tell you that for the most part, black mass attacks will rebound on the blacks and it will make the whites get angry much faster. Events like Kulini have had a bigger repercussion negatively on the blacks than you could imagine. I think large-scale attacks would be good for whites. I always saw large-scale attacks as being excellent. The bigger the attacks, the more they come in numbers, the more whites they try to kill, the more the reaction against it is going to just shoot through the roof. I think that will be a godsend, really. Over the years, I've thought about it many times. I've observed things, and I still regard it as the best thing that could happen. If the blacks were to try and bring 1,000 blacks, 10,000 blacks, 100,000 blacks, and they try and wipe out all the whites in a suburb, they come in a massive number, they try and kill everybody. Maybe the government also just pretends, oh, we don't know what happened. We think it was just black people who'd had enough of racism, you know. We'll investigate it and see if we can find anybody. And 3 years later, you find out they've never found anybody. Oh, you know, there were all these whites who were killed and, you know, all the forensic evidence, we either didn't find it or all the files got lost and it never went to trial and we just couldn't find a damn person to arrest. That is much more likely. That is much more likely. But I will tell you that even larger scale attacks, when it starts getting to 5 victims, 10 victims, 20 victims, I think those things will work for the whites like you can't believe. As it is, whites are jittery over, oh, a farmer died here, a farmer died there. And murder in the cities, those kinds of things have already been affecting whites. And I think anything that starts upping those numbers, 5 whites were killed, 10 whites were killed, I think anything that ups those numbers will really push white morale right into the red. Then you'll start seeing things happening. Then you'll really start seeing things happening. And I know people have already been hunting for farm murderers. The police don't get them, so the whites go and get them. That is the basis for the whole security industry, is that whites are catching criminals that the police accidentally, on purpose, never managed to catch. So whites are catching them, whites own security companies, whites catch them, and they hand them over to the police with the evidence. Even then, the police let many of them go, but that is the way the system is working currently. I think that all the events that are happening here in South Africa, that we are seeing a slow long-term trend. And this slow long-term trend was already well at work in the mid-1980s. The slow long-term trend that is occurring in South Africa is a parting of ways between the blacks and the whites. It's a slow long-term trend. Whites have lost their jobs. Whites have made blacks lose their jobs. Blacks make whites lose their jobs. There is a slow parting of ways between the races. This very slow decoupling of the whites and the blacks is going to set the scene for some kind of future conflict. The blacks, the ANC, would like that conflict to be racial. And any future conflict could be partly racial. But there's good news for the whites. There is good news. If there is warfare that comes, when it slowly eventually develops, this war is not going to be just racial. In this decoupling of whites and blacks, there are new stresses coming between the blacks. There are blacks who want to control other blacks. There are blacks who refuse to be controlled by other blacks. The blacks are engaged in struggles among themselves. And little by little, that is also creating some kind of violence. Now, President Nixon, the American president, he wrote a book called The Real War, and it was actually an excellent book. In that book, he wrote quite a lot about South Africa. He knew everything about South Africa. In fact, all these American presidents know everything about South Africa. They might never say one word about South Africa, but they know everything, I can tell you. They know all the details down to the finest point. Don't imagine they don't know it. Nixon pointed out that the Soviet Union's game in South Africa was to create a race war. In that military intelligence video I put out, I mentioned that analyst was saying the ANC is nurturing the racial conflict. And that is true. They have long nurtured the race war against the whites because that is their ace up their sleeves. That is what the Russians strategized and which they totally agree with. Their ace up their sleeves is a race war between blacks and whites. Now, there is a video I did quite a long time ago called Strategy versus Tactics. And it was an important video. And if you haven't watched it, you need to go and listen to it if you are serious. What is happening here is a case of ANC strategy versus white tactics. And the ANC wants a race war, but white tactics are actually helping to slow this thing down to a degree. And what could actually come is a civil war slash race war. And for the whites, anything that moves us away from race war to civil war is excellent. It's absolutely excellent. Probably the closest such conflicts are the civil war in Angola and the world war that happened in the Congo from about 1996 to 2006. Those are examples of a type of civil war among blacks. And that is excellent. A race war where all the blacks are against the whites, that could be possibly, in some ways, the worst case scenario. But what if you have a race war where there are quite a number of blacks, even as little as 5 or 10% of the blacks, are on the side of the whites? That changes things a lot, I must tell you. That opens up all kinds of games. And if you start getting bigger groups of blacks struggling with each other, that also is a problem. The blacks know that the whites are their prime enemy, but then now and then the blacks go and they kill some of each other, and that stirs up new trouble. That stuff is very possible, very doable, and we may be at the beginnings of that. I think that in a race war or a civil war, when you start getting to the heavier stuff, white unity is going to happen so quickly. When people's lives are on the line, I assure you, you'll be seeing large numbers of whites flipping over and starting to defend each other. I've been watching this country. I can tell you, the two races are splitting apart. The process is very slow, but the process is unstoppable. The races are splitting apart, and it's going to be good. The whites are going to be a force by themselves. The whites will be just another tribe. And the most important core of that tribe will be the Afrikaans people. They are going to be the core around which other whites aggregate to, those who do not leave the country. And I tell you that things will get really interesting. Once the blacks start fighting more and more against each other, that opens up all kinds of fantastic games. But even if it was just black on white, that would also have lots of benefits to it as well. But I think a civil war would be a much more fun war. There'd be a lot more creepy stuff that can really work. As I've observed these blacks and talked to these blacks, I've had chances to talk to them in all sorts of ways. And I will tell you that there are things in this country, trends that people have not even noticed. There's one particular trend that I like to keep to myself, and it's a trend that I love. And every now and then, once a year or whenever, I go and I speak to some people and I ask some questions and I listen. And I want to tell you that there are possibilities in this country for us whites that none of you can even imagine. There are possibilities with these blacks that you cannot even imagine. That there are some things that happen in this country that are so freaking awesome. They are happening very, very quietly. And none of this that is happening is being pushed by anybody. What is happening is completely and utterly natural. It's a totally natural process that's just happening all by itself. Blacks have done things. Things that they've done have had a cause and an effect. They have instituted a cause, and the result has been an effect. Some of these effects are slow-running trends that have run for years and years, very quietly. And things are happening in the minds of some of these blacks. Things are entering their heads, and things are changing inside their heads. And strange, strange possibilities are just sitting there. And year by year, those possibilities gain more momentum. Those things will remain totally quiet and totally hidden. And nobody is even noticing some of these things. But there could be alliances and possibilities, business possibilities, political possibilities, ultimately even military possibilities that are actually being created under our noses without us realizing it. There have been times now and then when I talk to a black and a black tells me this and another black tells me that, and I sit and I think about it. And I want to tell you, given the fullness of time, if the whites just hang in there for long enough, given the fullness of time, in this country and in this subcontinent are rich, rich possibilities. Possibilities that are political, possibilities that are business, and possibilities that are military. And if the whites just hang in there and just hang on to their position like crazy, there is going to come a day when some of these possibilities are ripe for the picking. And when that day comes, we can unleash things of our own. There are nightmares of our own that we can unleash one day. We did not create the nightmares. We had no part in these nightmares. But these nightmares are coming by themselves. They are nightmares that the blacks themselves have caused among themselves in their own greed and their own lust for power. They've done all sorts of things. And if you look very carefully, one of the best things that could happen in this country is a civil war. And anybody who attempts to make this into a race war will ultimately start failing. They can only push the race war for a certain period of time. But there is going to come a time where the race war turns into a civil war. And these wars could expand. These wars could expand and engulf bigger and bigger areas. Now, the whites need to hang on to their situation here in South Africa. If we whites will just hang in there for long enough, there are games that we are going to be able to play that eventually we are not going to be powerless and sitting on the defensive. We are always sitting on the defensive. And the blacks are on the attack. The blacks are on the attack for our farms, for our jobs, for seizing chunks of business. The blacks are stealing and maneuvering at a high level. There are many things these blacks are doing that are also not positive for them. They are kicking off trends and things that they themselves have not even taken cognizance of. The notion that all race war is going to be against whites alone is also bogus. That's also bogus. If the whites stand together, which I assure you, when real shooting starts, you will see 90% of the whites gathering together. Even if today they don't even speak to each other, they ignore each other. I assure you, when death comes to your door, it's going to change people. I've been watching this for a long time. The more bad things there are, the better it is. Whites will form an ever more cohesive force. And as we form that cohesive force, that's the time when it becomes playtime. It's going to become playtime for the whites. And nobody has played as many games as we have. We have played many games. And there are many, many new games waiting for us. We just mustn't lose our nerve. And we mustn't let ourselves lose faith in each other. There are so many rich possibilities here. Now, the Americans these days are like the new British Empire. And the Americans and the white liberals and Jew scum and elite scum outside in the rest of the world, they think that they are masters of gameplay. But I will tell you that we whites in Africa, we've also played our games. And we can play better games than even the Americans and even the rich and the super rich and the Jews. We know Africa like the back of our hand. And our playtime has not started yet, but our playtime is coming. And the things that we'll be able to do when the blacks are ready for playtime is going to astound you. Our most important thing is to defend ourselves, keep ourselves alive, and hang in there for dear life until the time of the black attacks comes to an end and it's time for the whites to play games. A simple example is crime. We have managed to survive waves of crime to the point where there are now vast numbers of blacks who are working in security. There are lots of Afrikaans whites working in security. They are able to carry out the function that the police cannot carry out or do not want to carry out. It's probably more a case of do not want to carry out. Look at how we have managed to survive crime that is wild, crime that is rampant. And we hardly even think about it. We've survived so many crimes. And I'm telling you that it's not just crime. There are many other areas that we can play in the future. And those possibilities are growing all the time. Some of those possibilities are so bizarre. We could never have predicted them. So as long as we can hang in there, whether the blacks steal things from us one by one, or whether the blacks attack us en masse, or whether the blacks attack us in any in-between way, there is nothing that truly can threaten our survival. Of course, there are those of us who could be killed, but we as a fully functional group, we have got a lot of stuff happening for us. And a lot of this splitting between the races is lose-lose on both sides. The blacks are losing, the whites are losing. But ultimately, as per that military intelligence report, which I totally agree with the analysis, in terms of who's losing the most, it's not the whites. The place where we could lose the most is if they seize all our properties. That could be our biggest loss. That is probably the only big loss that could really hurt us. But other than that, there's not much that they can do that can harm us. They can break our morale down, cause people to leave. But they are losing a lot of things. Lots of things are going wrong for them. All kinds of things have gone wrong for them. And among the best things that have gone wrong for them are things among them themselves. And therein lies some very, very strange fish. There are so many things that have happened in this country. This place, you mustn't look on this place as a powder keg that can be lit by only the blacks. There are many powder kegs that the whites can light in the fullness of time. When the time is right, we whites can set so many things on fire that will burn so brightly, that will burn in ways that you cannot even begin to imagine. And I think it will be very funny to watch the Americans and others trying to contain the fires that we could start if we wanted to one day. I think the whites who live here, as long as we keep our heads and focus on staying alive and building our cohesion and building up our strength, I think that the greatest playtime is awaiting us. And we have the skills to unleash all kinds of unpleasant things. We can do it overtly and we can do it covertly. We can unleash all kinds of crazy things. And the situation in Southern Africa and even Africa as a whole is becoming more and more insane. And if we can keep our heads at the height of the insanity, you are going to see that the best days of the whites may yet lie ahead. And let those who threaten us and think that working towards our destruction will cause us to collapse, they may think they're digging our grave, but they could be digging the graves for themselves and many, many others. So I'm going to leave you with those thoughts. War, let me tell you, war and violence. I've thought about it thousands of times. And every time I come to the conclusion, chaos is our friend. Chaos is our greatest friend. And even things like disinvestment. I'd like to suggest something to the whites. When the liberals want to disinvest and move money out of South Africa, please, please make them do it. Let money flow out of this country. Do not think that the correct direction is money flowing in. The money must flow out. The liberals, the Jews, and the elite, the money must flow out. If the money flows out, it's going to work for the whites. The whites are going to have some of the greatest times the likes of which they could not even begin to imagine. Under no conditions, encourage the money of the rich and the elite to come in. The money of the rich and the super rich must flow out. It will flow out as long as there are losses. It will flow in if there are profits. The profits should be happening for the whites. The profits should be happening for the small businesses, the medium businesses, but not the big businesses. Let the money flow out. Let the big businesses be gone. When they are gone, it's going to be very good. The elite will not have as much reason to poke their noses around here as they have in the past. They will not be in the position to come and be the nuisances that they've always been. Let the money flow out. It will be the best thing in the long run that's ever happened to us. And then playtime is coming. White playtime will be coming in the years and decades ahead. We're going to have a lot of fun here. And we will see who ends up in the graveyard. It might not be the whites, as so many have thought it will be. Maybe the graves that will be overflowing will be the graves of those who planned our demise. So, that's it for today. Thank you very much for listening. And just remember that I might end up in the USA in April, and I hope it comes off. So if I do get to the USA in April, it's going to be awesome. Until then, take care of yourselves. We'll be chatting again soon.